Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
We're here for another episode of Smart Coaching with Dr. Brian Garrity and Dr. Clayton Kuklick. And today we're going to focus on athlete and coach mental health. Guys, great to have you here today.
Thanks, Keith. Yeah, certainly a topic that's interesting, doesn't often get talked a lot about, but thought it might be useful here to have a chat about it in this podcast.
Yep. Thanks for having us back, Keith. Certainly an important topic, something that I agree that we do need to talk about more often. And Clayton and I work with in the College of Professional Psychology, so every day we're working with psychologists that are dealing with a variety of people with different mental health illnesses as well as just symptoms, and trying to figure out at an interpersonal therapeutic level as well as organizationally and at societal level what to do to help people with their health. And one of the biggest things we talk about is stigma. So anytime we can help talk about this in a positive, productive, therapeutic way is really important.
Absolutely. And being November, that's kind of one of the initiatives with Movember. They've moved from just, you know, men's prostate health to include mental health in this as well. And, you know, I've seen more and more the NBA has had a great initiative and, you know, having some of their players address it, you know, on commercials and things like that. You're starting to see it more and more. And I know from a personal level that it does affect the people we know and athletes. And a lot of the times, though, I guess from seeing it now on the other side and seeing a young athlete who has some issues, that we really don't understand that and we don't know how to address some of those things as coaches.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think you brought up a lot of good points with that. We don't know how to address this stuff, too, because it's generally not in the coaching education portfolio. At conferences, on podcasts, on websites, you know, on social media, we're not generally talking about mental health. We're talking about X's and O's and the Jimmies and the Joes. So I think talking about anxiety, depression, overall well-being, happiness. One of the things that we had a student here looking at in our program was suicide and suicidal ideation, you know, thinking about suicide. And obviously that's a very significant one that, you know, there's no coming back from. So mental health issues range on levels of severity, you know, from, you know, somewhat minor, but then also very debilitating, lifelong issues that can, you know, never fully resolve, you know, such as alcoholism and drug addiction, and sometimes depression as well can be a lifelong battle.
And even some of the even more less subtle ones, like I can remember playing for Coach Pettin or whatever, it seemed like some of those, that sucker was never happy at all. Yeah. And some of those things, so, you know, we think about like, okay, quality of life and living a healthy lifestyle. So how can we like actually also engage that in our coaching profession to overcome feeling like we constantly have pressure on us all the time? I mean, that's not a happy lifestyle by any means.
And there is some work out there too. I think this is more of the bridge between psychology and philosophy, the existential questions of why are we here? Why are we doing this? You know, what does it mean to live a good life? And taking seriously those types of questions and then having conversations with, you know, the guys on the team and creating an environment that supports those things as well and not just pretending like it doesn't exist.
I know I had explained to me that anxiety basically is not being able to shut off your brain in terms of dealing with the what ifs. And when I think about that from, you know, the athlete perspective and from the coach perspective, having anxiety, it would not be an easy thing to deal with. It is not an easy thing to deal with because your mind is constantly posing those questions. So I think of a coach, for example, and think of you lose a big game, and then it goes into the, you know, the what ifs of your future. What if, you know, are they going to fire me for this? Maybe go into the extremes, you know, and some of those same things then applied to the athlete. And it's in some ways becomes debilitating if the coach or the athlete, number one, doesn't understand that they have it, and number two, doesn't have strategies to deal with it.
Yeah, and even with anxiety in general, I mean, that's going to impair your performance from a coach and athlete. The other one that comes up with athletes is injury is a extreme, I don't want to say extreme, it happens regularly, but you can see that definitely athletes going into depression or worried, like you said, about holding their position or keeping their job when they come back, or what their actually future holds. And similarly, like you said, coaches at the end of the season, or they lose a game, and then all of a sudden we're constantly thinking about what the future is that may impair our performance.
Yeah, we call that too, Keith, like cognitive anxiety, you know, the uncontrollable or the constant kind of negative experience of these thought processes, as opposed to there's another anxiety that we call somatic anxiety. But sticking with the cognitive anxiety too, you know, there's a reason why you hear, you know, control the controllables, as well as the, I think it's the Irish proverb about, or serenity prayer, where mm-hmm. you try to understand, you know, what can I control, and then what can't I, and let go of what I can't control. And hopefully I have the wisdom to know the difference between the two. So one of the questions that coaches can too think about is, just like with athletes, can you control that? Can you control your opponent? Can you control the weather? Can you control your attitude? Well, you know, you can't control the weather. We can prepare for it. Can't control if I get fired or not, so I can go back to work and I can go about my business and do the things I can control. Can you control your attitude? You know, we always say those types of things, but obviously attitude is influenced by a variety of factors, not just my own volition over it. You know, if somebody comes up and punches me in the face, I'm going to have a hard time controlling my attitude towards it.
Right.
So it's things like that that I think are a little bit complicated. Some of these kind of simplistic understandings too, that your attitude, your work ethic, all these names of things are controllable, when in reality, some of these things are influenced by a variety of social factors too.
My point was, yeah, also, isn't that also part of, like, I mean, I was kind of probing an argument, but also isn't that part about, like, developing a lifestyle in coaching that is enjoyable, that's fun? And one of those things you talk about, Keith, right, is we have to work hard and put the time in, even as a coach. But I'll pose a question just for the sake of argument, but does the time, the amount of time that we spend in the office or looking at film, does that always equate to success and wins on the field? Because what we would say is, right, like, oh, we got to make this a happy lifestyle, and I got to have balance in my life. And because some of the literature would also argue about isolation, coaches sometimes feel isolated and they don't get to spend as enough time with their family, or they don't get to exercise as much as they want to. So how can we kind of like reframe our environment to make it more positive, make it a healthy lifestyle? But one, you know, probably, you know, a critique of that is going to be, well, how is that going to equate to wins, or how is that going to, that's more time that I'm taking away from watching film, or time spent on the watching film or on the field, or trying to help athletes get better.
I mean, my thought, hopefully insight on some of that, is that the notion too of work-life balance is an important discourse. It's an important way of thinking about how, especially in the U.S. and in particular football, I think compared to other sports, you know, like, you generally don't hear the same anxiety about youth t-ball.
Yeah.
Or
right.
You know, playing with blocks. Clayton knows I like to use the word, for the phrase playing with blocks. You don't hear like, oh, our kids are outside playing too much. They're down at the park playing too much. You know, there's too much pickup going on. So the notion of work-life balance to help, you know, get back to pleasure, you know, happiness, positive aspects, and that staying in a dark room watching film for 12 hours a day for everybody, not for some guys, but for everybody, might be a little bit too much. And then you got to look to see, well, what effects are caused. You know, if it's causing you physical or mental health problems, then you probably want to make a change. But the counter argument to work-life balance is also that people have values, and those values vary. And so you want to align your time and your actions, you know, with those values. So if you want to spend countless hours watching film or in the weight room or scouting and going to visit other guys to learn, you know, maybe that's okay with you. You've made that decision with some critical thought and awareness about what's going on around you and have decided that. But if your partner isn't happy with you, if your kids are struggling, if your physical state is deteriorating to the point where you don't like that anymore and that's not desirable for you, then you need to make a change.
Balance might be appropriate. Yeah. So I totally see, like, some guys actually love, I think, Keith, you even mentioned you love watching film. You thought that was like the, I mean, if memory serves me correct, am I speaking out of hand there?
No, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you saying a couple podcasts ago that, like, that's one of the things you love to do in respect to coaching. So I think that jives with your argument there that, you know, that's part of your healthy lifestyle was doing that. And maybe you've kind of reduced other things perhaps that were part of coaching to kind of get that work-life balance and negotiated that time spent there.
Yeah. Ultimately, though, and I agree, I do love doing that. But I think there is a point for me where it did become too much. And I think back to being at Baum Wallace, and we used to call it the bunker. I mean, it was literally a cinder block room. There's no windows in it. And we would sit in there all day long. We're watching film. We're drawing up cards. We have the Sharpie marker fumes in there as well. And honestly, I needed to take more time. I had several seasons where I left in a way that was unhealthy, that go to my doctor for my yearly physical, and my cholesterol is off the charts, and my weight's up, and my blood pressure's up, and all those things, because I wasn't taking the time to exercise. But it was a little bit of, I think there's kind of the peer pressure of it, like we're going to grind, that attitude towards it, but also maybe a little bit of, I don't know if it's anxiety, but some of those things we talked about where if I don't do this, then we might not win this Saturday. I need to put my time in. And ultimately, it's insignificant, because whether I know exactly what's going to happen on every single play from what I watch for film doesn't really as matter as much as if I translated that as a coach and a teacher to my players.
But I think part of the problem that you described then from a mental health perspective is that this kind of stuff can lead to obsessive behaviors.
Right.
You get that paranoia and the inability to walk away or to separate yourself from the activity. So where you're constantly, you know, feeling that need and urge to watch film, prepare, script new plays, check in with guys and see how they're doing about class as well as understanding plays. And then you're putting more pressure probably on them or stressing them out to come and watch film with you and prepare and pre-practice. I love football because you got pre-practice, you got pre-practice, post-practice, post-practice, overtime. It's nonstop.
And all of the above.
Yeah.
Well, even like Keith said, though, like he had some physical things problem, that were happening, and that's kind of like a Keith, probably a trigger that, hey, you know, I need to kind of manage these things. But, you know, the other thing that Keith, that you mentioned, that I thought that was really interesting too, is you kind of reframed the problem in respect to like watching film all the time. I mean, you mentioned it's like, yeah, but ultimately, yeah, it's really nice that you can predict every play that's coming out. But really, what it comes down to is how well you can teach and have your athletes acknowledge that, perform on the field in respect to the underpinning factors in what you're watching in film or whatever that's going to help you win on the field.
Yeah, ultimately, I feel like getting caught up in that, and the coach who gets caught up in that, and again, I'm saying I am 100% guilty, is I'm probably not placing enough value on the work that I'm doing on the field with my athletes. Because again, what's in my brain and understanding the opponent, yeah, I have to call the plays on Saturday, but at the same time, you know, I don't know how much of the value is to that, because we sit there and we plan that out and I have my scripts ready and I know in this situation I want to call this play. I have that data there available for me, so why do I feel like I got to keep going back to it again and again and watch it one more time and, you know, verify whatever? And again, like I said, not valuing what is happening on the field with those athletes, that I have a certain amount of time and reps, et cetera, to get them ready, and that the coaching part, the skill development, all those things really matters to this, maybe even a great deal more than my film breakdown and my understanding of the opponent.
Well, I think one of the things you mentioned, and I know a former D1 football coach, NFL coach, head coach, that it wasn't until he experienced a heart attack that he kind of became the healthcare leader on the team and changed the hours, required physicals, changed the healthcare structure there. So when we suffer or experience these meaningful episodes, you know, these kind of significant emotional events, it turns on a little light bulb and we're able to make self change as well as kind of organizational change. So it'd be great to see out that same experience, if coaches could intuit this, if they could have the empathy and then take this kind of moment as a wake-up call to start looking at their own self as well as those around them and practice self-care and relations of care to other people, so that way can live hopefully longer and more healthy and not only productive lives, but I think like Clayton talked about earlier, it's not only being productive, it's more self-autonomous, self-determined, a life that is in line or in accord with your vision and existential psychologist, humanistic psychologist, Maslow would call it self-actualization. Other philosophers call it something else, you know, developing oneself in a more authentic kind of way. Death a key factor in one's happiness and longevity.
Yeah. I thought we mentioned some of the social factors, and Keith brought it up too. I think that word grind.
Yeah.
Keith, can you maybe, like, because I used to love watching video too. I was a quarterback and did offensive coaching at the high school level in football, and I loved watching film too, but I can totally resonate with you in respect to the grind and that pressure doing those things. How do you think that like exists? I mean, it's totally like socially constructed though, I think, with like football coaches, that we have to watch film and we got to do a lot of it. The hard work, we have to put our time in, maybe one of those other buzz terms, you know, think about like how that, yeah, ideally we want to have this life balance, but still have these social pressures on us to think like, oh, I got to get at least 10 hours of film in, and that's going to equate to success somehow, some way.
Well, I think it is what you said. It's a social side of it. And we see these memes and we see short video clips of guys talking on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever it might be of how hard they work. And the idea, you know, I go back to, I think, I don't remember the quote. It's one of those things like, I don't, you know, you don't even know how the guy intended it. But I think it was Bill Parcells talking about not going to get outworked by the opponent. I mean, that just becomes honestly a war of attrition. How do you measure that? Like, Brian, I know you worked 23 hours today, so I'm going to work 23 hours in 1 minute. I mean, we get caught up in these things,
yeah,
and we wear it as a badge of courage. I remember talking to a coach from Pitt a few years back, and he's kind of the direct opposite of it. Like, I got all this technology, see all these guys put the technology in, and it just adds to their workflow instead of taking away from it. And he was critical of a lot of guys at that level wear their divorce as a badge of courage. Like, I stayed in the office and this is what happened to me. And, you know, ultimately we got to get rid of that attitude a little bit. We do need to work smarter rather than harder. We do need to get out and take care of our health. And I think there's a lot of examples of that we just don't hear enough. I remember Jim Tressel years back when, you know, Ohio State won a national championship. He talked about how that year he made every single one of his coaches get out of the office and exercise each day, and he did, and they were mentally sharper and better, and they coached better than they ever have. I mean, I'm sure they had some really good athletes too, but I do think that's a very important point.
A lot of this can be explained through the Protestant work ethic and the founding of the U.S. and the idea that we have to sacrifice ourselves with pleasures of the body in order to, you know, accomplish some type of productivity, whether that be working out on the farm or in the factory. And it's kind of trickled over into sports as well. And you've got very high-profile coaches nowadays, too, in the social media and the news channels and the magazines, types of things, too, because it presents a certain narrative that conforms to what America is. You know, that we're hardworking all the time, that we're tough, nothing gets us down. Like you talked about with Tressel, Coach Tressel. You know, there's other coaches, too. We talked about it when I was coaching down in Tennessee in the SEC, that they used to joke that Spurrier would play a lot of golf in season. He had a lot of talented athletes down there, but there's other coaches too. We just don't hear about these things. Yet the coach up at St. John's, I believe it is,
yep,
in Minnesota,
mm-hmm,
that just passed away.
John,
you know, there's
Gagliardi,
a little bit,
yeah,
of research. Yeah, there's a bit of research too on some of these coaches that are very successful, but they have alternative or marginalized coaching practices. They don't want to go out and tackle every day. They don't beat guys up. You know, they just have a different approach, but again, that's lesser known than just grind it out and work hard and
get your hours.
Yeah, get your hours in, pay your dues. There's no other way. You can't avoid it. Nonsense.
We mentioned marginalized. Would you really consider marginalized or different, perhaps?
Would I consider?
Yeah, like, to me, I think those are like just different practices, right? They're different approaches that perhaps don't go in alignment with the norm or traditional thing,
yeah,
and still have,
yeah,
been. So
I think it's the same thing. I think non-dominant or marginalized just gets it away from the center.
Gotcha.
So they're different, and they're different because they're different from the traditional or the norm practices. Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't hear about them as much sometimes.
Yes. I mean, one of the things I wanted to get in quickly too would be looking at exercise. Talk about this for coaches, but let's talk about it from an athlete's perspective. Coaches are stressed out. They're watching film, sitting on their butts. They need to go exercise. And an athlete is already probably getting worked enough. You can't tell an athlete, oh, yeah, just go out for a run or go for a little jog and you'll feel less stressed. I mean, it's just adding more stress to them.
Because they're already, we're already doing conditioning perhaps in certain ways.
Yeah, so I mean, exercise is a real popular thing nowadays to be used in the same breath of treating depression or anxiety. And with somebody that's already active or active for their sport or for their livelihood, we need to identify alternative
strategies,
just providing health care, providing access to a psychologist or a mental health counselor.
Social support,
and having a group where you can voice your experiences or emotional reactions to things, that you can seek out other supportive behavior, just like a tutor. You would have a mental health counselor and others, a team group. Very common, too, to have an injury group, you know, if you have a variety of injuries, so that they can commiserate and share their experiences and support each other in their rehabilitation process.
Mm-hmm. How about also maybe teaching athletes about balance, perhaps, and how to balance some of those things?
The coaches could practice, could be then interned, you know, indifferently in different contexts at times, but yeah, certainly still can.
Well, I think that goes to, we have to get away from that mentality of, you know, everything we do is going to be a grind. We put that on our players, and then I think we feel obligated to make sure, hey, we got to – I told them they're working this hard. We have to work this hard. So it's kind of maybe putting the focus on working smart. You know, we're going to go out. We're all going to go out. We're going to do our work. But then after that, we're going to set it aside and, you know, whatever it might be. And, you know, the coaches being able to be a good example and see them spending time with their families or – you know, whatever it might be, I think that's where we got to start to draw some lines and be able to have some balance, because we don't show our players that. I think we more often than not try to show our players how hard we're working because they're working hard as well.
Yeah. I mean, and that point and other points that we touched on earlier, we call it in the literature like presentation of self. You know, and there's pretty good examples on social media of either. I see it more with athletes than I do coaches, but how we present ourselves. You know, that I'm guarding the office or I'm working so hard, you know, that everything I'm doing is great and couldn't be happier. And athletes present those images out there. And then, you know, next thing you know, they're in rehab or they kind of announce that they're in therapy. So we need to be careful about, you know, that presentation of self. And coaches like to present themselves as very confident, very all-knowing. And in turn, then the athletes will be confident and will perform better. You know, but the reality is, too, reducing stigma from some of these uncomfortable conversations and uncomfortable topics, you know, like violence, mental health. I saw another incident I saw in the news last week about hazing and bullying at the high school level. Putting your head in the sand and presenting yourself like everything is rosy is not really a best practice, not the most educated way of handling some of this stuff.
Guys, I know we're up a little bit against the time crunch today. Certainly a lot of ideas here. Hopefully we raised some awareness. We certainly did not offer all the answers, but I think the point is you have to be cognizant of this and be able to work some of this into your professional development as a coach, as well as to come up with some strategies both to help yourself and to help your athletes.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. One, perhaps, I mean, Brian and I were talking a little bit about, you know, what potential resources out there. NCAA has an online manual. But again, there isn't a whole lot of resources on these, so it might be the recommendation when things are coming up, reach out to us perhaps with some resources. And
yeah, I mean, so two things, I think, really concrete things that coaches can be aware of, too, is that interpersonally, when they're dealing with athletes and the team, that if you look at some of the literature again, and just consider, too, how different behaviors influence you and make you feel, yelling, degrading, hazing, bullying type of behaviors, putting too much pressure on guys, you know that that's going to take a toll on. And it's not going to treat everybody the same, but it's going to have an effect. So trying to coach with more effective and more developmental growth-like processes, and then as an environment, modeling healthy practices, reducing stigma, providing access. And when you don't know, you know, read a little bit, reach out, but also bring in somebody. Bring in a psychologist, bring in a social worker, bring in a school counselor. Think about ways that you can learn about these things, and they'll provide you with other additional, you know, resources and advice. Then you can put these things up in the locker room. You can put them in the manuals and the playbooks as ways to reinforce a healthier environment for the athletes.
Guys, I appreciate you taking time today. It is a very important topic. I know we've touched on this throughout the season, but thanks for the focus on it today.
Thanks, Keith. Looking forward to next week. We'll see you next week.
Thanks. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.